Well, I've got the easy job because Dr. Middleton and Reverend Kilburn have pretty much laid it out, but I'll do the thing that I do best, which is I'm a law professor at North Carolina Central, and I teach constitutional law. And so I spend a good deal of time teaching about the First Amendment, and I figured I could do that for about 10 minutes here. And so we could have a legal foundation upon which our conversation can really begin. Reverend Kilburn read to us the First Amendment, at least that part about religion, and it says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, the first thing to note is that it's Congress shall make no law. So the First Amendment, by its terms, applies only to the national government and to laws passed by the national government, by Congress. It doesn't apply, by its terms, to the state governments. And indeed, there are justices on the court who have in the past and who presently believe that it should not apply to state governments, that it wasn't intended to apply to state governments. And here's the argument, that as Dr. Middleton told you, a number of states had established churches at the time of the creation of the United States of America, at the time of the framing of the Constitution, and they were perfectly within their rights to have established churches. But since various states chose different churches to establish, it wouldn't be in the best interest of a national government to establish a national church, because that would offend one state or another. And so the idea was that the states could have established churches, but that the national government would be neutral on this point. And so the national government was not to have an established church. In the early 20th century, the First Amendment was incorporated into the concept of due process, which is found in the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment says, no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Well, one of the liberties that we shouldn't be deprived of without due process of law is the liberty of living in a state that does not have an established church. So the Supreme Court in the early part of the 20th century incorporated this language of the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law, incorporated that concept into what it believed to be due process of law, and said now it means, the 14th Amendment now means, when it says no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, that includes no state shall have an established church, and no state shall make a law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And some justices historically and even today say, dead wrong. Big mistake. And Clarence Thomas, for example, is the justice who has most recently said, this is a big mistake. It wasn't what the First Amendment was intended to be, and that the states should be allowed to have established churches if they want to. Okay? Nevertheless, that goes against the grain of legal history, and in fact, the legal history has moved just in the opposite direction from that view, that indeed the protection against an established church or the establishment laws respecting an establishment of religion, that's the next thing I want to just mention briefly as an aside. It would have been very easy for these very good writers to have said Congress shall make no law establishing a religion. They didn't say that. They said Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. I wonder what that means, to respect an establishment of religion. I'm not quite sure what it means, but I think it means not only is the establishment of religion prohibited, but laws relating to, having to do with, akin to, that give the appearance of establishing religion, even if they do not by themselves establish religion, are prohibited as well. And so that was, in the early 20th century, incorporated into the concept of due process, and therefore states cannot do it either. Not only can Congress not make laws respecting an establishment of religion, neither can states. Well, what did that mean? It began to take some shape
due to the advocacy and the courage of a small religious group in the United States of America, and these are my constitutional heroes, the Jehovah's Witnesses. Because many, many, many of the cases that went to the United States Supreme Court interpreting these religion clauses in the First Amendment were brought on behalf or brought by Jehovah's Witnesses who felt that there were things that were happening in the country that violated their religion. For example, saying the Pledge of Allegiance and requiring students in school to say the Pledge of Allegiance, they felt was violative of their religion because in their religion, as I understand it, the only allegiance that they can pledge is to God Almighty. And so they challenged legally this practice of pledging allegiance to a flag and to a government. And the United States Supreme Court in the late 40s, I think it was 1947 or 48, sided with the Jehovah's Witnesses and said, you know, no student should be forced to say the Pledge of Allegiance in school, that that is a law respecting an establishment of religion. What did he mean? What did the court mean by that? Think what the court meant and what we've learned in cases subsequent to that case, Barnett versus West Virginia Board of Education, is that the government ought to be neutral on matters of religion. It ought neither favor religion nor ought it to be prejudiced or biased against religion, but ought to be neutral. And not only should it not favor one religion over another, but neither should it favor religion over non-religion. That concept is very much in debate right now among justices on the United States Supreme Court, because there are a number of justices who agree that it should be neutral with regard to one religion over another, but do not agree that it ought to be neutral with regard to religion over non-religion. And so that's an issue that I think the court will continue to wrestle with in the coming years. In 1971, the United States Supreme Court employed a test in a case called Lemon versus Kurtzman, which has, which remains the primary test for figuring out whether something that the government does violates the Establishment Clause or not. It's a three-part test, and it looks at what's the purpose of the government action. Is the purpose to advance or to hinder religion? If its purpose is to advance or hinder religion, it violates the Establishment Clause. What's its effect? Does it have the effect, whether its purpose was whether it was intended to or not, does it have the effect of advancing or hindering religion? If it has the primary purpose or effect, and I added the word primary, and that's important. If it has the primary effect of advancing or hindering religion, then that's an Establishment Clause violation. Finally, the Lemon test had a third prong, and that is, does it get religion and government inextricably weaved in a way that makes it very difficult to disentangle? Okay? That test has come under a great deal of criticism in the 80s and 90s and today. And so there have been some other tests which have been put forward by various members of the court. One is a coercion test. That is to say, if the government acts in a way that has the tendency of coercing people into participating in religious activity that they wouldn't otherwise participate in, then that violates the Establishment Clause. And you see that test with regard to prayer in school. That's the test that gets used for when the court looks at school prayer, when it looks at, you know, prayers to open the high school football game, when it looks at moments of silence. Would students in those schools feel coerced into participating in something that they might not otherwise participate in if the school wasn't leading it, or if the government official wasn't leading it, or wasn't establishing it. And there's a famous case, Lee versus Wiseman, where the school system had a practice of inviting a local clergy person to give an invocation before a football game. The school provided each clergy person with some guidelines about how to make their invocations non-sectarian. And the court said that's the very problem. The minute the government's involved in providing guidelines for what prayers ought to be, you've got a government establishing a religion, or making a law respecting an establishment of religion. And the third test is a test that Justice O'Connor set out in a case called Lynch against Donnelly. Lynch was the case, a famous case from 1984, that looked at whether or not it was a violation of the First Amendment for the city of Pawtucket, Rhode Island, to set up a nativity scene or to have a private group set up a nativity scene on public space. And the test that Justice O'Connor suggested is, let me see, what are my notes? It's called the endorsement test. And it borrows two of the first two prongs from the Lemon test, and that is the purpose of the government action to endorse religion, to advance religion? If so, it violates the Establishment Clause. Secondly, what's the effect? Is the effect, whether it was intended or not, of the government action to endorse religion? And she defines endorsement, by the way, as making somebody feel either an adherent of that religion feel as though they're in the club, so to speak, or making a non-adherent of that religion feel as though they're not in the club. Because the point is, under the First Amendment, all of us are in the government club, and none of us have special memberships. And the court held, by the way, in this Pawtucket case, that so long as the nativity scene wasn't there by itself, but if it had some candy canes and some reindeer, that it was just another symbol of the holiday season, which to many people desanctified a very religious symbol. And so there have been criticisms of that decision on both sides. Anyway, that's sort of a primer on the Establishment Clause and the First Amendment as it's been interpreted by the United States Supreme Court.